What? Yeah. Yo. I'm kicking it with my boys from Always Record. Yeah. We keep on talking, never get bored. Oh, sorry. That was so disconjointed.
Sometimes we get floored, though. It's true.
Yeah.
So
sometimes we get ignored also, but
yeah.
Oh. Sorry. Wah, wah, wah. That's all right. I don't.
You can jump in anytime, and you know it.
Oh, I know.
You got a battle. This is like the fucking dawn of man on this radio show sometimes. It's like, I mean, Patrick has pointed out, he's like, you guys, it's like, you know, plow through it. You know, it's like you're, yeah.
Well, there's so much to cover. I mean, the cool thing about Always Record is that, I mean, in a way, you don't need to go back. But I've re-listened to certain Always Records like 3 or 4 times that were extremely, you know, pertinent to me. I don't even know if I use words that actually exist, but
no, it's all right.
It's true that I know. I mean, it's cool because it's like, you know, I'll listen to certain things 3 or 4 times. Other times I'll just listen to them once, because sometimes you guys do cover ground that you have covered before, but it's never annoying. It's never annoying, not to me.
Really? Sure. Not to you.
To me. Like, I know, like, it's weird because I was just talking about this to Alan. Like, I listened to the newest Always Record with Coke and Anderson and
He actually pronounces his last name Cook, I believe, even though it's pronounced, even though it doesn't look like it's spelled that way.
It's Cook Anderson. And I know the other guy better, but I can't remember his name right now.
Alex Fulton.
Fulton. I know Fulton better than the other two. But anyways, like, it's funny because that was like a classic. It was an alternate reality Always Record, because it was like I'd been listening to those guys forever. It was kind of cool like that. It was a classic Always Record. It wasn't out of context. It was.
Yeah, it was. That's what I said to him. I said, it actually felt more like an old Always Record. Like.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Okay, so this whole parallel universe thing since then, I know has been like plaguing you, Alan, but it's been plaguing me also, and it continued today even. So 60 Minutes on Sunday had to do with CERN's CERN, the collider, trying to
Large Hard-On Collider.
Large Hard-On Collider.
That's all I need to
remember how to pronounce.
That's all I needed to say for the night. Now I can go back on mute. I'll just come in with a dick joke and go back.
After everything we've been talking about, dick joke is appropriate. So, yeah, I mean, they talk about, you know, in the 60 Minutes that just aired on Sunday, they talk about it trying to discover new dimensions and stuff like that. And then, of course, you know, the whole Alice in Wonderland thing that you brought up on Facebook. And then earlier this morning, somebody said, it was true. Jennifer Palmer put up a post that said, a portal has been opened. And it seems everything is pointing towards this whole idea of a Stargate almost. But to me, Stargate is just opening to the land of the dead. Time travel is just an introduction to the land of the dead, so forth and so on.
Oh, can we just cover? So I know you and I have spoken of this, Will, but let's go back to that. The idea of, I think this is a really important thing to connect. So time travel as like abduction, and you said the idea of like, say, with alien war, an alien abduction might correspond with lost time.
Right. Yeah, well, this goes back to John Keel again. John Keel noted that the fact that almost everybody who talked about Men in Black or who talked about alien abductions, he noted that first alien abductions always gave their name as some kind of character from mythology. So when somebody was like, I'm an alien and my name is Horus or some shit like that, you know, I just picked the easiest one to. But he almost emphatically said that they always gave a quotation about time, like they said, I'll see you in time. Or, you know,
who was saying this?
Aliens who would abduct other individuals.
Right, but who is relaying the aliens that abduct other individuals?
The witnesses, because if you read John Keel, John Keel's Mothman prophecy and other things are basically, they're dictated to you in a narrative of him interviewing witnesses. So the witnesses that he would interview would always say something to the fact of, they said something really peculiar that kind of gave me chills when they said it. They would say, we'll see you in time, or we'll see you next time. And they would always give these.
It's like a bad Arnold Schwarzenegger joke, like as right. Mr. Freeze. See you in time.
Well, it's like, right, right. Oh, no.
Have you guys seen the new Terminator by chance?
No.
You know how he always has hasta la vista, which is kind of a time reference? His newest one, the catchphrase in this newest one is, nice to see you.
Really?
That's fucking, it's horrible.
That's pretty bad, dude.
It's fucking horrible. He like falls off of a bus, flips around the fucking, on the Golden Gate Bridge. His head rams through a police car. The police looks at him. The police looks at him like, what the fuck? And he goes, nice to see you.
Do you remember Scott Onstad's thing with the Golden Gate Bridge and the Bay Bridge being the two gates, the golden being the sun gates. And the gates. Other one being the moon? And then he equated gates. Them with the Egyptian entrance and
two entrances. It's weird. It's weird because the new Terminator movie, the new Terminator movie, Genesis, and the new Planet of the Apes, and if you remember, Planet of the Apes starts with James Franco working for a company named Genesis, which is what the new Terminator has, is a company named Genesis.
And they both have this whole thing with the Golden Gate?
Yeah.
Really?
And
only
that, they both share an actor. The actor, the guy who befriends Caesar in the new Planet of the Apes, he is John Connor, Julius Caesar, John Connor. He plays John Connor in the new Terminator. It's fucked up.
I forgot.
Andy Serkis, whose birthday is 420.
Was he Gollum?
Yeah. Yes, he's Gollum, and he's the Beast, King Kong.
Do you know who was going to play fucking Gollum in Kubrick's Lord of the Rings?
Fucking what?
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings?
In the 1960s, the Beatles approached Stanley Kubrick with a film idea to do Lord of the Rings. He considered, but he didn't follow through with, for different reasons. But the thing was, is that fucking Frodo was going to be Paul and John was going to be Gollum. And so what's fucking crazy is that the ape who played Moonwatcher in the film 2001 A Space Odyssey mm-hmm. was the director of photography for John Lennon's Imagine video. There was a whole other level of this.
I just want to point out that you guys kept saying Genesis. You know, there's the old idea that Genesis means the genes of Isis.
Mm.
Right. And you guys know that that's where the 42 letter name is derived from, is the first 42 letters of Bereshit or Genesis. Yeah.
Well, it's weird because the whole
leading up to the void.
Planet of the Apes has to do with Oz straight out. There's no fucking doubt. And the fact that the readaptation of Planet of the Apes, the first one by Tim Burton, it came out in 2001. And of course it starred Marky Mark. And it's so funny. Like the movie, I Heart Huckabees?
Yeah. Combined with fucking Three Kings, which are by the same director.
But it was... they were by the same director?
Yep. Which is the crazy thing with him being all about oil, and he's a fucking ex-soldier, and then he's the fucking soldier with the gold.
Right.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Yeah, that is pretty crazy. But the fucking LaForce, when in I Heart Huckabees, when he comes in, he's like, we're talking about LaForce. There's some fucked up, there's some intentional fucked up shit about. Okay, so if you look at I Heart Huckabees, I might have already talked about it on the show, but there's a scene in I Heart Huckabees where the main character, who looks like Alan, I can't remember his name, but he's fucking the girl from Inception. Leonardo DiCaprio, Leo, an obvious beast resonator just because of his name, but not only because of his roles. He has this animus in Inception, who is his elder wife, who is dead, and she injects herself in all of his subconscious going-ons. Do you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. She is the same person who plays in I Heart Huckabees, correct?
I'm trying to visualize her in Inception.
Okay. All right. Let's do I Heart Huckabees. I Heart Huckabees.
Stop saying Hucklebees. It's Huckabees.
Fuckabees.
Fuckabees. Fuckabees.
Fuckabees. Fuckabees. All right. All right. So the main character is Jason Schwartzman.
Yes.
Isabel Hubbard. That's not her. Naomi Watts. Of course, Naomi Watts is the chick from
King Kong. I
know you're right. And Mark Wahlberg's in here. Jude Law has a whole bunch of crap that has to do with this. Isabel Hubert? Is that right? Well, maybe I have the wrong chick entirely.
Love is the Jude Law, remember?
Dead Man Down.
Who's also an AI.
Love Under Wilson.
Well, he has an AI, he has a big moon resonance.
Well, that's the whole thing, is so you can see the Pinocchio-Gollum connection. It's all about Gollum. It's all about basically artificial intelligence, basically being a
moon child,
replication of ourselves, and then, you know, basically like mirroring everything back but the soul.
Well, if you read Moonchild, the whole aspect is creating a They're trying to create an antichrist using the idea of directing certain souls towards matter. So it's he specifically uses the Gollum connotation of injecting a moon flavored soul by, you know, they inject everything in the woman who. The Aleister Crowley character impregnates a woman who has nothing but moon flavored correspondence around her, whether it be silver, mirrors, so forth and so on. Yeah. So they're trying to direct the soul of that particular flavor into this person to create the Antichrist or Moonchild.
Right, which is the war is actually between the white and the black magician. So you have your zebra.
She is a French. I thought that she is not. She is not the animus in Inception.
I was I was tripped out yesterday looking up the death day of Stanley Kubrick, who was born on that day, and it was a chick I had been watching the night before on Comedy Bang Bang, who's like, I can't find her right now, but I don't have my internet, but I was just weird that like she was born on the day he died, not the same year, obviously, but that she was. I was watching her the night before on Comedy Bang Bang, total randomness. I'm like, what? How fucking random is that? Jesus.
Okay, so in I Heart Huckabees, what happens is the Schwartzman guy is. He gets down and okay, so they're trying to fight over this wetland area, and right. I think he actually has sex with her in this wetland area. If you play close attention, this is absolutely intentional. He fucks her on this log, right? And you mm-hmm. can see the wetland area. He's going at her,
mm-hmm.
but if you look at the log is a penis, and it's a big damn log, but it's got like veins and stuff on it. It is a penis.
You know, well, I mean, that's, you know, I mean,
Okay, later on, Schwartzman has this dream. Like, he does this freaking thing where he, like, meditates or whatever, and he has these images. And in the image, he has her sitting on a log, and then in the background are all the trees being cut down. So there's, like, a whole shitload of trees being cut down, and that's the whole thing, where they're trying to get this wetland not to be demolished, right? So it's totally tree is penis castration. And right when that happens, she comes in and she's like, what are you doing? You're not supposed to be doing this, you know. What's the fucking word? They're detectives for...
It's like a deconstruction, like whatever. Yeah,
existential issues. They're Dustin Hoffman and...
I've seen the movie a million times. Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about. But yeah,
so like that, it's intentional symbolism. Subliminally, they're connecting the trees to the penis. So you're supposed to feel some anxiety when he's going in there and he's seeing her on a log. It's supposed to be a penis, and then behind her, all of these penises are being cut down. Do you know what I mean? And it's totally intentional. Right. Like, they're having sex on a damn penis. I've looked at the thing like 3 or 4 times just to make sure that I wasn't imagining it. And then right then, like, or sometime closer, sometime in the scene.
I looked at it a few times to make sure I was looking at a penis.
I just wanted to make sure it wasn't me, you know? So, fuck you guys.
I kept looking at Playboy for the articles.
That's funny. As you said that, I was looking at the word. I have in front of me the thing that my write up for the summer 42, and I was looking at the word "playgirl" in reference to Jack Nicholson's character in The Shining. Looking at the playgirl.
1942 is the same plot, though, isn't it? I mean, it's the same fucking plot.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, the whole elderly lady seducing the younger man to fucking initiate him into the mysticism of sex. I mean, the girl...
I mean, he's chasing her, and it's his lucky day because of the sacrifice of her husband.
If you look
at the note that actually she got, the telegram that says that her husband is dead, there's a pack of camels sitting on top of it with the the backside with the pillars. And so you have Joaquin and Boaz just slipped in there with Gimel is the center column for Sirius. And so you have
Gimel has of course, has been charged with the subliminal message of having the guy with the penis sticking out on the fucking cover. And the fact that the camel is one hump. The camel has one hump, which is a pregnant hump.
The artist lived. That's where he grew up, was the place where that statue exists, who was asked to do fucking pack of cigarettes. I forget what the statue is called.
So you're saying that it was actually subliminal. It's subliminal in the way that it has to do with the artist's upbringing and not intentional.
I don't know about that. I just know that he happens to be from the place where the fucking statue was from in the first place. And it's overt as hell.
You see what I'm saying? That has more to do with that has more to do with collective unconsciousness than it has to do with
from the Phoenician and Chaldean Gimel meant killing stick. And so a stick that kills as a pictograph became camel.
We're right back where we fucking started with the whole penis shit. The whole penis lightning death stick.
If that's where you want to go with this, Will.
that's where you went, man.
Where there's a will. Hey, you know what? Sometimes a camel cigarette is just a camel cigarette. I don't know.
Oh, love under will, right? Well, listen, motherfucker. What I'm saying is Mark Wahlberg walks in and he's like, he's fucking straight up. But the full fucked up thing is his name is Tommy Korn, which is this whole Inception thing.
Well, it's the harvest. It's the golden harvest.
Right. He walks in. He's like, what about the LaForce? What about the LaForce? You kept mentioning because she's French and LaForce.
Just to be clear to listeners, in the Marseille Tarot, strength was originally called LaForce.
Right. LaForce, strength, and then ladder. Lust.
Yeah. Which is all, but the point is that it's Oz. It's the lion. So Leo the lion was the fucking MGM lion, right? For days, right? That was the actual lion at the beginning of The Wizard of Oz.
Right.
And so, you know, we know the whole thing with the lion's paw handshake being the three people that she encounters, the heart, the mind, and the strength. But the whole point is this fucking lion and the MGM from its inception, the meaning of it only got reemphasized throughout over time because they used the sound effect that was created by Industrial Light and Magic for the beast in Poltergeist to be used as the MGM lion roar for over 20 years. Right after Poltergeist came out, they maintained it that way. You know, MGM did produce 2001: A Space Odyssey, which is interesting. You know, for just symbolically that you'd have the trademark beast on the front, but the that's the whole thing with strength is that literally the lion is the sun, just to be clear.
Right. So the beast is the sun.
The beast is the sun, but the lion's mane was meant to symbolize the sun's rays. I mean, that's the symbol of the sun that goes.
This is going back to Beauty and the Beast because the whole mirror, the mirror symbolism is very prevalent in the whole Beauty and the Beast symbolism,
right.
And that has to do with the vanity of the moon. The moon only the moon has no light of its own. It only reflects the sun's light.
Right. Well, that was the thing is that Zaire can't be with Shakina, and so Zaire not only in order for him to project the handmaiden, he also has to project Samael. And so in order for him to relate to Lilith, he has to create another version of himself. So it's all being projected. So it's all substitute reality. But it's dealing with the repression that's existing. And this is how we'll maintain the empire is through the control that comes with this repression. So if we can create the fucking consensus reality so that people don't actually have the true, you know, what intimacy could actually mean to liberate our minds completely to be in a whole other paradigm. We don't realize like the potential that actually exists. We're like, this is accepted because this is what it is, but it's all for the sake of the empire. It's all sacrifice for the empire. It's totally nuts.
Fuck. It's weird because we're talking about empire and earlier on, we were talking about King Kill. But if you think about the two opposite ends of the tree, one is empire and one is crowned.
That's right. Yeah, the whole thing is that the tree is a star, but it's been pulled apart, and out of that pulling extends the other empire. That's the principle that gets communicated over and over again throughout the Zohar. I mean, that's the whole crux of the matter is that this exists, and so you have Gevorah is where the Klippot enter in the tree in the division, and so Gevorah obviously its geometrical value is 216, which is 6 times 6 times 6. It was originally associated with the sun before it was associated with Mars. I'm finding every indication the more I study ancient writings that all the associations that we have for the planets have been flipped. And that Mars wasn't until the Greeks probably that, you know, well, that's Mars is Roman, but you know what I'm saying, with Ares, that became a war symbol. I don't even know if that's what it was initially. I'm not even sure because it seems that Saturn had a whole different set of symbolism and was like a feminine symbol and then came to mean what it means with Kronos, with the Greeks.
Well, you know, can I just throw something interesting? Like when, I was trying to learn some like basic Japanese, which obviously I've not succeeded at all or thought about in a long time. So, but when my wife was trying to teach me some, like, you know, you start basic vocabulary and like things like what I thought was interesting is like, you know, like a tree would be the same thing as like Thursday, I think, and like fire might be the same thing. And I like as sort of ask, I started asking questions because I'm the sync head nerd that I am, and it's like, wait a second. So you know, the same way you might have like in Romance languages where it's like lunes, martes, miércoles, like where it's basically the planets are the days of the week, right? And then
sure,
oh, that's sort
or
of
Caesar.
Stuff.
Throw Caesar in there while we're at it.
you know, but just to say, so Romance languages have the very specific days of the week. Well, the Japanese days, I'm pretty sure they all match up exactly. Now, at what point is that intentional? You know, is that cross-cultural pollination or whatever? But they, even though they're meaning different things, like they're not saying that. They correspond the same way.
Right.
And then, obviously, here in the States, we're using this like Germanic Norse names, you know, for like Thor's day and Odin's day and stuff like that. But even still, there's that sort of similar, how would you say, you know, corresponding mythology or symbol set, you know. So just to say, I'm curious, and I don't have an answer to this, I'm curious, again, like at what point it's so exact all over the globe, and if someone knows of exceptions to that rule, I really welcome that information. But it just sort of seems like that's something where I sometimes wonder, is that the cosmic coincidence of like, oh, of course, this Monday just really fucking syncs with Mercury or the moon, you know. It's like, we really just, all across the globe, we can't help but think of Mondays, that's a fucking moon day, you know. It's like,
right.
Well, I this is exactly what I was talking about when I was talking about Sherlock Holmes. I mean, our first paranoid in instinct is to say it's because of this person was smarter than all of the rest of the individuals.
Right, that it seems like a standardization, like a human-oriented standardization.
Mm. Right, when it seems more to be more... Okay, so it seems...
Well, for me, it seems like human-oriented standardization. That's something where I actually feel like, that can't be an accident. Like, that's...
Right.
But ego... Ego basically says, well, there has to be a reason for this because it looks so intentional. There has to be a generative spot where this came from.
I think that's the fucking joke of the whole thing, is that we as human beings think we're the only thing with intention around here.
Right. Exactly.
We're the top of the fucking heap, right? We got all the animals below us. We were able to objectify and do all this shit, right? No one else has intention, right? No one else can influence things. It's like, and then we assume that this dimensional viewpoint that we have is the only thing here, and that there's nothing else fucking around here.
I think artistic individuals understand the fact that they themselves, trying to be as original as possible, have in years past after their creations decided that their creations had more meaning or more correspondent meaning than their initial intention. Do you know what I mean? By trying to be original, they actually were borrowing from old myth. Stephen King, in his book On Writing, calls it a myth pool. He actually used it as a story basis in his Lisa story or something like that. He wrote this whole story about the fact that everybody goes to the same pool of myth to draw out their narratives for storytelling or whatnot. I mean, anybody who's picked up a paintbrush and said, I want to create something totally unique, and they painted it, and then a couple of years later, they said, oh, fuck, you know, I just drew a Pegasus. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, that was a fucking...
Then you can do an overlay with it and manipulate it and see what comes out. That's the thing. We're living in a... Different shit is happening. We can tell multiple stories at the same time and let them all crossbreed. It's nuts.
Yeah, but, I mean, my initial point is saying that, like... I do shit in one day, and the next day I have no idea where the inspiration for what I came up with. It was completely instinctual. It was done without thinking.
Hey, but, you know, it's true. I don't know. I just got tripped out. You probably will appreciate this, Will. You know the film Transcendence with Johnny Depp? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have recently.
Okay. So did you notice the way that they emphasize Depp once again as the archetype of the dead man throughout, that he's dead and that,
you well,
know,
he's fucking dead. He only exists in that movie for 15 minutes or
right.
something.
Right. So I have an experiment to run. So I noticed that dead man and transcendence are the exact same length. And so what I'm wondering is, and if when he dies in transcendence, if that's when he gets shot in dead man.
Well, I would like to push that. I would like to push that a little step closer, because the fact of the matter is, okay, so
his name is fucking is Bill.
Sure.
In fucking Will. Right, but that's the thing. Is
but
that
he's
Will,
William,
because of William Blake in fucking Dead Man.
Right. He's both Will. He's Will, but I mean, you have to use the connotation of Will as in love under Will or whatnot. And the reason you have to do that is because the whole thing, that whole movie, Transcendence, is about evolution. Evolution, evolve, spelled backwards, is love or whatever.
That's the whole thing is about our artificial intelligence. And this whole is the replication, the same.
Okay. Fuck Johnny Depp. Think of Bill Bellamy. Is it? What?
No, keep it on Johnny Depp, because that's.
No, fuck that guy. Paul Bellamy.
What do you got?
I'm no, sorry. Okay. I'm saying, what is his name? Paul Bettany. Okay. Paul Bettany is the reverse of Johnny Depp and Transcendence. So what I'm saying is, okay, so he was in Transcendence. The movie that he did right after that is Avengers Age of Ultron, where he basically reverse roles what Johnny Depp is in Transcendence. Age of Ultron is about
the fall of a god?
No, it's about Paul Bettany becoming an artificial intelligence, which his name in the movie is Vision. Okay? He becomes exactly what Johnny Depp does. But the thing that killed me, okay, so I like Paul Bettany a lot. The reason I like Paul Bettany a lot is because he's Jennifer Connelly's husband, and they met on the set of A Beautiful Mind. Beautiful Mind was filmed in 2001.
That was another one. I was trying to remember that one. Sorry, but just to say really quickly, Noah and A Beautiful Mind are the exact same length.
And they both
have the same Jennifer Connelly and fucking what's his fuck.
But they also have Paul Bettany.
Russell Crowe.
Okay, Paul Bettany is okay in A Beautiful Mind. Listen to me for a second. Okay, so Russell Crowe is John Nash in A Beautiful Mind, right?
Right.
Jennifer Connelly is his wife, Alicia Nash, right?
Right.
The individual that he sees that doesn't exist, that's his best friend.
Ed Harris?
No. Not the Parcher dude. The guy, that guy's name is Parcher. He's a man in black.
His friend at the dorm?
His friend at the dorm is named Charles.
Okay.
Okay. That guy is played by Paul Bettany.
Right.
Paul Bettany met Jennifer Connelly on that set. And they fell in love and they became man and wife. Okay?
That was so romantic, Will Morgan.
Thank you. So, I don't know what to say other than that. Okay, so the other movie that Russell Crowe and Paul Bettany played in together is called Master and Commander. Have you seen this movie?
Yeah, The Best of Two Evils.
Okay, so Master and Commander stars Russell Crowe as Jack, the captain of the ship. You can also think of Captain Jack. And Paul Bettany plays Dr. Steven. He's the surgeon.
Oh, shit.
In this movie, Paul Bettany convinces Russell Crowe that they need to go to the Galapagos Islands because he wants to study Darwin's observations on evolution, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, in the movie Creation, have you seen this movie or even heard about it? 2009, it's the movie about It is the movie about Darwin, evolution. Who plays Darwin? Paul Bettany. Who is his wife? Jennifer Connelly.
No shit.
Yes, absolutely. So then we have Russell Crowe and Jennifer Connelly once again together as man and wife, just like they were in A Beautiful Mind, but now they play as Noah. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So we have Noah and Darwin in a ship going to the Galapagos Islands and Master and Commander, where Russell Crowe is the captain of the ship.
I'm going to have to check some running times, dude. Because this is the thing. I'm finding that when things hold a strong enough resonance, this fucking happens. You know, The Aviator and Titanic are the exact same length.
They're also the same length
as the original miniseries of Helter
Skelter. That's what I'm fucking telling you. You found a correspondence between a movie of Transcendence and Dead Man, right?
Right.
We need to switch your view from Russell Crowe and go to Paul Bettany, who is the opposite of Johnny Depp. And remember, the whole idea of evolution is only the strong survive, right?
No, the whole idea of evolution is God damn it, I'm tired. Jesus Christ. The fucking origin of species is the survival of the fittest. Jesus.
Survival of the fittest is only the strong survive. It's the exact same thing. If you pay attention to Transcendence, the first thing that happens is they go to this conference, and the whole conference has Paul Bettany and everybody else standing in front of the sign that says evolve.
Right. I'm just, you know, the thing that people...
His name is Max Waters. It's Noah.
The thing that people miss about Darwinism generally...
Johnny Depp's name is Castor...
Is his work in... did you ever see Emotions in Animals and Humans by Darwin? He basically... Darwin stipulated that an indicator of survival is the ability to have empathy, and that it's through fucking cooperation that things survive.
Right. Well, I mean, a lot of people... Okay, so I don't necessarily want to preach Darwinism here, because I do not believe...
Darwinism has been propagated in such a way that it's kind of removed from a lot of its original proposals.
What you have here, though, is Noah and... You have Noah and Darwin in the same boat, literally.
Right.
Those two can't exist on the same plane.
That's the guy who fucking is supposed to be the Nephilim that climbed on the boat.
Huh?
I'm sorry. I'm talking about the Gamora. Like, there's this whole thing where a Nephilim, it's like the last of the Nephilim or whatever, climbs onto Noah's boat and lives there, hiding. And so he took it from, some weird, esoteric text. All those things were actually plays on Kabbalistic ideas and stuff, like the rock people and all of that. That's a real thing. I mean, that's not just he took artistic license for real, but he was drawing upon very common esoteric, or not common, but you know what I mean. But you're talking about the guy who snuck on the ship. I can't remember who this Bellamy guy is. I can't visualize his face.
In Master and Commander?
No. In Noah. He's not in Noah. Oh, okay.
The only people who are in Noah is his wife, who is Jennifer Connelly.
Jennifer Connelly. But they got married in A Beautiful Mind?
They met in A Beautiful Mind.
In real life, they got married.
In real life, in true life, they met on the scene or on the set of A Beautiful Mind, and they got married afterwards.
Okay.
But you have to understand that it's Russell Crowe and Paul Bettany, Russell Crowe and Jennifer Connelly, Russell Crowe and Paul Bettany over and over and over again. So the thing that you have to realize is it's Russell Crowe is married to Jennifer Connelly in A Beautiful Mind. His imaginary best friend is Paul Bettany. Okay?
Right. I got you now. Yeah, that's crazy shit.
Master and Commander is Paul Bettany and Russell Crowe. Noah is Jennifer Connelly and Russell Crowe. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get what you're saying. He's breaking the fucking mirror.
And creation, which is the Darwin story, is Paul Bettany and Jennifer Connelly as husband and wife. So, I mean, Master and Commander is Darwin with Noah, and their wives are the same. And it's weird because if you go back and you watch like Dark City, that's the end of Dark City, is everything floods.
Right. And hence, every time she fucking walks to a pier, that's right. The meaning is that the boat's supposed right. to be at the end of the fucking pier.
Right. And in Transcendence, you have Will Castor is the name of Johnny Depp, and his best friend is Max Waters, who is Paul Bettany, and Waters is in his name. Waters, of course, Mem is memory, and it all has to do with memory, and it's fucked up. It's fucked up. Like, you can cut this 50,000 different ways.
Yeah, and so I was tripping out on the Noah thing Kabbalistically in terms of what Crowley had to say about the fetus, the ship being the fetus, and this whole the embiotic waters being the flood, but that literally you could transpose that to the, you know, that basically the, you know, when they take a fetus is a way that they'll demonstrate the signs of the zodiac. If you want to lay out the zodiac where they correspond to the body, I was taught this in massage school, and then I looked it up further and I found out that there's this whole that's like ancient understanding of like how they determined where the zodiac lands on a form is the way that a fetus is curled up in the womb, because they do this whole thing. Yeah. So like why, you know,
so I mean, like we were talking about how, you know, these the days of the week being synonymous in so many different cultures and stuff. Almost every culture on the planet has a flood.
Right.
A flood,
the deluge, because a fucking giant deluges happened, and then they wanted to mythologize.
Or maybe it's just a birth. Maybe it's just birth. Maybe the flood is just birth.
Right.
Water breaks.
Right. Well, they're talking about the big birth. So this is the whole thing, is that they look at everything is like, when we say as above, so below, we're talking about like, oh, the earth and the stars. No, but like as above, so below, the way that it actually applies is one of that, this by extension, what does this look like? So if you're looking at the dynamics of something on this level, what would it look like on a grandiose level? And so there's this whole idea of the birthing process, and like we're going through the suffering of a massive birth. I mean, that's a common understanding of the, you know, of not just like eon shifts, but the actual redemption itself, you know, that Kabbalistically and alchemically they would relate the whole thing to a giant birthing process.
So, I mean, my main overall like idea is that, okay, you found some direct correspondence between Transcendence and Dead Man, but it would be interesting to see what you would do if you, I mean, the guy's name is Max Waters, which is
literally because
flood. It's literally a flood connotation in the middle of Transcendence. So I wonder if you would like look into Paul Bettany, if you would find anything else as far as like movies that would correspond to Dead Man. Like, it would be cool to mix those three together. Like,
well,
you would have...
Well, I'm just dying to fucking actually overlay these with my computer and play with it that way. Like, that's the direction I want to go in, but my computer can't deal with it. So I've had so many projects. I noticed that all three Matrix movies are almost the exact same length. They're not really the exact same length, but they're very close. And so I'm just like, come on, dude. And so that was actually when my computer fried, when I was trying to take those three movies, put them all simultaneously, use the timing from Andross with the fucking Lifehouse Matrix. I was trying to get the Who's Lifehouse to align with the three films, making sure that it aligned with the first one the way it did in his presentation, and I was going to do the whole fucking thing. And actually, I found that you can only get it on CD. You can't like download it, but the Lifehouse is available. I looked for it everywhere. I tried to fucking torrent. I can't find that shit. But yeah, that was like a project, and then I haven't been able to produce it. But yeah, there's a lot. I want to show Rosemary's Baby in 2001: A Space Odyssey. They're the same length. They came out within a very short period of each other, and they're about the same thing. What the fuck? I don't know where that message came from.
What, the pissing?
Oh, that was Will. Okay.
Yeah, he's pissing. So now you got to talk to me.
Good.
Feel like this is like when I was trying to do a show with John and Misty Greer, and it was like.
Oh yeah. Oh, speaking of which, I fucking missed John. What the fuck? Have you talked to him?
I spoke to him a few weeks ago. He's okay. He's alive.
He's just got his own stuff going on or whatever.
Yeah, at least that's how it seems. I have to come out of Photoshop world. Let me turn this screen off. I spoke to him like 3 weeks, about 3 weeks ago. He said that he's completely like hasn't been on Facebook or checked his email, that he's started this. So, you know, he moved to Portland.
He's living in Portland.
He's living in Portland, yeah.
He could hang out with Patrick.
I believe he has. I know he's hung out with Alex Fulton and Patrick cool. And you know, a few other guys up there. I don't know. He's been MIA for a while, though, that it was starting to get a little scary to me.
Okay, well, he'll be back, though.
Yeah, I mean, when I spoke to him a few weeks ago, he said that he has, like, an episode of Pentimental, like, almost done, but that he just hasn't gotten a chance to work on anything, and...
Okay. Cool. It happens, dude. I can tell you.
Oh, God, I know. Yeah, I mean, especially, like, you know, uprooting your whole life and moving cross-country and... Like, I look back to even when I moved out of New York, I think we were, like, it's sort of documented and always recorded in some ways of, like, there's some, like, really sloppy artwork for a few episodes where I'm basically, like, trying to make shit happen, like, really quick. And, you know, I remember, like... being in a hotel room listening to an Always Record that I wasn't there for. This was like back in the early days when it was like not being there for an episode. Oh my gosh, you know?
Right.
I was like, I gotta hear what they said, you know? And, but, you know, just sort of like realizing how, you know, life changes while being involved in long-term artistic projects, if we can call this that, which I think that's a fair thing to call Always Record. It's like a long-term artistic project. At least, you know, it's documenting our lives and, you know...
It's still an experiment. We're not sure what's going to come of it. But.
Sure, but I'm saying, like, the way my personality or interaction might change when I moved, and I've moved twice now, you know, the way your personality and interaction might change with your relationship and moving situation, and I think these are natural things, right? It's like you go through life changes. You wouldn't be the same person.
Sure, but we're documenting it.
Yeah.
What's cool about this. This is like a magical diary.
Yeah.
It literally is that other people can listen to if they feel like it.
Right. Where were you before?
Literally, the magical diary is like a key component tool in it, you know, for the, you know, the occultist aspirant, you know. Write down everything. I wrote down everything I fucking ate and did, for close to a year. I have a book, and I gave myself a tarot reading every morning and an I Ching reading every night, and I wrote down the results for close to a year. And I wrote, like, every ingredient in the food that I'd have. I, like, wrote everything fucking down. But with it was just the basics, you know. It's like I went here, I went and did this. No, I made it a point never to write my opinion about anything. Never like my view of it. It was just the thing. How many cigarettes I smoked? How many times I masturbated? Whatever it happened to be. And but what's,
I like
what's
how you say. I like how you say how many cigarettes I smoked, but then when you say how many times I masturbated, that's when you coughed.
Right. Well, the cough was started, and then there was no.
Hmm.
It's the paganistic symbol on Starbucks to begin with.
But like, it's 9/11.
And then they're talking about not having reindeers and shit like that on the cup. That has nothing to do with Christmas. It has nothing to do with Christian.
Why when we hear a police siren go off, the word siren literally means not just the pretty mermaid. It's the mermaid that would lure the sailor in to take him down below so that she could be with him, but he's dead. She takes him into the other dimension or whatever, right? But literally kills the seaman. So he, you know, they pull. This is the myth, right? Or this is the
killing
idea.
Your seaman, your precious vital bodily fluids.
Right. Now, way below, children of the caves will let their secret fires glow. But no, she takes the sailor down to the bottom, right? And so whenever you hear fucking police sirens, when the first image that comes to mind is red and blue flashing. So you're like, Joaquin and Boaz, okay, the fucking strength, okay, the slaves shall serve. They got a fucking inverted septogram over their heart, okay? But, like, just that you're, like, a siren, like, from the Odyssey? Like, what the fuck? Like, that's what they decided to call it, and it's the sound that the siren makes. It's the singing. And so you're listening to the singing sound, and then you got fucking Starbucks has the fucking siren on the front, which is what they call it. That's what the, when it, because I guess I got inquired, right, a few times. People have been, like, gone to the people who actually came up with that shit. And that was Starbucks' official explanation, was that it's a siren. And so I'm like, fucking 9/11? Like, really? Like, call 911? That's like, I don't know. That's weird. I don't know. Do I sound schizophrenic a little bit?
Oh, no.
only minimalistly.
I'll just ask the other schizophrenics if I sound schizophrenic. I was watching a adaptation of an Edgar Allan Poe thing about the, what is it called? It's the Asylum, where the it had fucking Michael Caine and fucking Ben Kingsley in it. So you had your, you know, but it's like the madmen take over the asylum and take the staff and put them down below and treat them like they, you know, like they're the madmen, you know, and they like take the whole thing over. Do you guys know about this?
No.
It's a book by Edgar Allan Poe, and I had a bunch of questions that I was wondering with it. I wanted about the actual book and how relatable what they were conveying was. But that's the principle. It's the first fucking page of the what do they call it? The the standard book for mental illnesses or whatever. What is that? What is it called? The God damn it, you know what it is. You know what I'm talking about? If you're going to diagnose an illness, a mental illness, it's the book that everyone goes to. I should know.
Have either of you ever seen a movie called The Ninth Configuration?
No.
No.
No. Okay. So, here's something. You mentioned, like, the insane asylum and all that sort of stuff, right?
The Ninth Gate?
No, Ninth Configuration. But it's made by William Peter Blatty, the same guy who did Exorcist.
Oh, really?
And
Mr. Howdy.
Okay, so here's what happens, right? When I'm on the road trip to go to the Olympia Sync Summit, one night, I mean, I was in, I don't even know what fucking state I was in. I think I was in, like, somewhere around, like, Nevada-ish. I don't know. It's just, like, middle of the night. It's fucking, like, 4 in the morning. My wife's passed out. I got to piss and I got to get some coffee and I go into some like random ass like gas station at 4 a.m. And I see, I don't know.
Holy.
Oh, so I see the, are you looking at it?
Yeah.
So
the Ninth Configuration, also known as, get this, Twinkle Twinkle Killer Kane, is a 1980 American film directed by William Peter Blatty. The film is based on Blatty's novel, The Ninth Configuration, 1970.
Oh, is you?
You there?
Of an earlier version of the novel, first published in 1966 as Twinkle Twinkle Killer Kane. The initial 1966 publication of the novel featured an exclamation mark at the end of the title, while all subsequent publications saw it removed.
Fucking Sutter Kane.
So check this out. The reason I picked this thing up is because I'm about I was going there to show my draft of the Suicide Kings video, which I'm correlating the crucifixion of Christ with the moon landing. Mm-hmm. I don't know what you're seeing online, but on this DVD that I got in the discount bin in a gas station at 4 a.m., it has a picture of an American astronaut on the moon with the American flag planted there, and there is Jesus on the cross on the moon. Like, he goes to the moon, and boom, there's Jesus.
Oh, yeah, I've heard you talk about this before. Okay,
right,
go ahead.
So I'm like, wow, I don't know what this movie is, but I gotta buy it, right?
Right. Sounds like the Ninth Arch inspired from Kenneth Grant.
So we
what the fuck?
I watched this in Boise with Jason Barrera. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now there's two really.
Had he heard of it before?
No.
Okay.
The only person I know who had heard of it is Andras. Because I mentioned it to him, and he goes, oh, yeah, with Stacy Keach. And I'm like, who the fuck is Stacy Keach? Just the actor in it. And he's like, apparently his movie, the movie Andras was in with Seth Green, what is it?
Attic Expeditions. Yeah.
Apparently Attic Expeditions is based on this movie, and that they actually use some lines from this movie in that movie.
What?
Whatever.
Okay. So.
Wait.
Let him finish. Shut the fuck up.
I want to know if when he says magic with a K, if that's from that movie.
No, that was completely improv. That was Andras suggesting that to. I've already asked about that. But go ahead.
So, now, if you guys remember, Will Morgan does a presentation. About the horse being a symbol of dick and all that sort of stuff, right? He does his Olympia Sing Summit presentation. Will is talking to me as I'm doing this road trip. Will is telling me about what he wants to talk about. And there was a thing which I guess you never got to really talk about during the presentation, but that you had a whole section of your presentation was going to be about the St. Anthony medal, the medallion of St. Anthony.
That's actually that's in the presentation, but yeah.
Well, St. Anthony is in St. Anthony's fire, which is ergot poisoning.
Yeah.
It's a fucking catcher in the rye.
So you have, am I right? It's St. Anthony?
Is it St. Anthony? Because that's important, because I've been tripping out on St. Anthony.
Well, what's the saint that you dealt with?
Okay, my recorder just crashed, just so you know. Okay. I'm pretty sure it's St. Anthony. There's two saints, and St. Anthony is the one with baby Jesus, which is what I talked about. Yes, St. Anthony is the baby Jesus, where he carries the baby across the water. So, yes.
He's the patron saint of ergot poisoning as well.
Well, he's the patron saint of long journeys.
Oh, so this is happening while I'm on this 2-month fucking road trip?
Wait a minute, are you saying that the patron saint of long journeys is also the patron saint of ergot poisoning?
I don't know about ergot poisoning.
Really? You should. Yeah, St. Anthony's fire. Look that up.
Ergotism. Anthony became sick with ergotism, a disease which is now known also under the name of St. Anthony's fire.
So Tony in the back of Danny's throat, and why that's like, you know, she's reading Catcher in the Rye. She's Wendy, the fucking book that revealed the truth about Catcher in the Rye from J.D. Salinger was called The Last and Best of the Peter Pans. So Wendy was invented for Peter Pan, and then fucking she's reading Catcher in the Rye. Fucking, I have this whole thing. So this is actually core. I'm sorry. It's like,
nope. Let me finish the fucking Ninth Configuration for a second. It's really simple. Will says he's all about, he wants to end his presentation talking about the medallion, the saint. I think it's St. Anthony, St. Christopher, some fucking saint, right? This medallion and he's got this whole thing with the fucking medallion of this saint. The ninth configuration, okay? This movie that I pick up in a random fucking gas station, right, because it looks like, oh, it's got Jesus and the man on the moon on the cover. The ending, at some point during the movie, a guy is wearing a medallion, hands it to another guy. The movie ends, literally, like the last 2 minutes of the movie are this guy holding this medallion in his hands. The camera's just focused on the fucking medallion. And he's like, the St. Anthony medallion, all my memory of my friend, and blah, 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 and all the. And they're just like, I mean, honestly, it's just staring at this fucking guy holding this necklace of this medallion. And I just wanted to say that that's fucking fascinating that if there seems to be a pretty straight through line. So that's all.
Yeah, St. Anthony and St. Christopher are really common. Both of them show up in Viggo Mortensen. I think I paid more attention to St. Christopher because he carries the kid across the water. But St. Anthony also is seen holding the baby Jesus. It's fucked up because in what is it? I can't remember the name of the Vanishing Point with Viggo Mortensen. Both of the medallions are there, and in The Prophecy, Saint Christopher is there, and Saint
Christopher Walken.
Right, exactly. And
so Christopher
a weird
is Christopher.
Does well, he yeah. Play Christopher? No, he doesn't. He plays Gabriel, but
oh, that's right.
He kills Eric Stoltz. He kills Eric Stoltz, and Eric Stoltz is wearing that medallion. Eric Stoltz shows him.
And don't forget, Eric Stoltz was Marty in Back to the
right.
Future.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And it all has to do with like it's the journey of the small child. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Which is even Killing Zoe, actually, because Killing Zoe mm-hmm. at the end, when they're like, "Let mm-hmm. me show you the real Paris," and they go mm-hmm. up above, it's like, "Oh, so we've been in the underworld, we've been mm-hmm. Underland." So you know, oh, they said it was Wonderland. No, it's Underland.
Otherworld, Underland, Underworld, all the fucking same thing.
Right.
That's fucked.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I just Googled
the moon.
It. In the ninth configuration, which the reason I brought it up is because it takes place in an insane asylum. The whole thing's about an insane asylum and who's really crazy. And I'll give you a spoiler, unless one of you think you're going to watch it, which you should, but whatever. It wasn't that great a movie. the guy who comes to work at the insane asylum is actually the most crazy of them all. He's so crazy that they devise a plan to make this guy think he's in charge of an insane asylum just so he doesn't go crazy and kill everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And so they basically give him this false memories and all this sort of stuff as part of his treatment, and it's fucking weird and all this sort of stuff. Anyway, it is Saint Christopher Medal.
Okay, so Saint Christopher is the one that I actually reference in the actual Oli Sync Summit presentation.
So
that
Christopher is the long journeys and Anthony is ergot poisoning?
Yeah, that is correct. But they both are seen with the baby Jesus in their hands. Like, if you look at their medals. If I remember correctly, in one, it's both Christopher and Anthony in Vanishing Point with Viggo, and then in Prophecy, it's Christopher specifically. So my point was that it was that medallion that shows up over and over, but it's the four, like when he's in Vanishing Point, he's traveling around the four corners, which is, you know, Arizona, Utah, Colorado, and New Mexico. Do you know what I'm saying?
Cherubim, Wheel of Fortune.
Yeah, it's the wheel.
Hey, Jupiter. Yeah.
It's the wheel. It's the cross. And if you pay attention to the last bit of my presentation, it's when every movie that he's in, he has like some medallion, whether it be Christopher or Anthony or the star of the Luciferian star that's in Lord of the Rings. But in other like the other shows, it's this fucking cross. It's the four corners. And if you read Jung contributes, like there's this great passage in the alchemic book that he wrote where he's
deconstructing all the alchemical symbols, where he calls it the quaternity or something along those lines, where it's this circle with a cross, which is the world tree or so forth or so on. And he basically says, you know, this symbol is the four corners of consciousness, two being unconscious and two being conscious. And they create like a marriage where one conscious is married to an unconscious and the other conscious is married to an unconscious. And you can also see that in Yod-Heh-Vah-Heh, which is Jehovah's name, where two are the exact same letter, which basically are the feminine, and the other two are the masculine. There's his name.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier about the queen and the king and the princess right. and the prince. And that right. that's within the family, and that that's the whole meaning right. of
right,
right. So Hulk,
well,
Mom,
so
Nina,
Jung points out that there's plenty of stories of Beauty and the Beast where the Beast has four colors, which basically are the empire on his forehead. Do you know what I'm saying? Like he mm-hmm. says strictly, the Beast and the maiden that he abducts are they have a secret that they share. They're the same exact thing. So they are the empire, like the whole, crust of civilization is based on this pool of, conflict and resolution.
Right. I'm bias wouldn't be the operative, but something happens because I've studied European occultism and then I studied traditional Kabbalah. And so I automatically see what happens when you merge the two together. It's as if I took an album and a film and I put them together or something. You know what I mean? I'm seeing something else come through. So like whenever I'm relating to the tree, I see all these implications because you have one set of people are relating to it in this context and this other group of people are relating to this context. And somewhere in the middle, things get revealed. It communicates the distinction between empire and empire, you know what I mean? Like
all right, no, I have one personal thing to fuck you guys up with. The Latin Church celebrates the feast of Saint Christopher on July 25th, which uh-huh. is that's my birthday.
Okay.
And it's also the day before Carl Jung and Stanley Kubrick's birthday, which is on the 26th.
Okay. Far out. Yeah, so that's weird because I got the Feast of the Immaculate Conception for my birthday.
Yeah, you and I are saints.
And then I was tripping the fuck out on the feast day for Archangel Michael in relationship to that gnarly sink web of the visitors and all of that with the MGM Grand being burned down. Basically, I found a synchronicity. This is the whole. I'm not going to go into the whole thing, but the point is, I found a synchronicity that if one was to admit or consider that the sync is intentional, it implies prior knowledge to the death of a lot of people, and so it's the only. It's like a bit of evidence that's really fucked up, because it's like, wait a minute, if they knew this. Than they knew before, if they're communicating that. So, and it happens to be one of the most convincing musically syncs that I've come across, and so mm-hmm. it's fucked up in that way. Because I'll show it to people, and I'm like, so what do you think? And they're like, you know. So I'm like, if you think that it's intentional, it means that these people knew that all these people were sacrificed in a building that looks like a giant Mayan pyramid in a fire that no one knows how it was started, you know. And so, yeah, that's fucked.
Pull us out of this shit. Come on, where are you, Alan?
I'm here.
All right. It's almost 1 my time, which means it's like 3 your time.
Really? Is it 3 for you, Alan? Jesus.
No. Wait, 1, 2.
I mean, I'm 11:43, so I don't know what the fuck. But yeah, no, I've been sick. I need to eat something. I haven't eaten in 3 years, so.
3 fucking years, huh?
Hey, Alan, thank you for the intro to the Lewis Carroll book. I've been looking over that again while we were, you know, in the course of the conversation, and that's pretty crazy.
Goddamn. Oh yeah, you like that?
I like the Bowman connection. Yes.
Cool.
Like I'm probably going to use that in a piece of writing I'm working on. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very usable. I mean, the whole situation, you know, fairies migrating into the actual world and the whole aspect of at pleasure and the human form and so forth and so on has a lot to do with, you know, the whole nightmare theory that I have. That was what was so fucked up. I mean, I talked to Asher about Nightmare, and then I actually went to the Stanley Hotel and watched the Nightmare there at Estes Park, where the Stanley Hotel is, which is what The Shining is based off of. So, you know, talking to him about Room 237 and everything, and then going and seeing this movie that I had actually had personal experience from and had been doing all this research and stuff and whatnot, and then sitting there and having like a physical reaction to the movie. That's the best thing about that movie, is what happens, you feel. It's a documentary. It's not supposed to be, you know, it's not supposed to be swiping you up in this narrative that is not true. It's supposed to be showing you know, an actor's representation of the actual events, but it had a physical effect on me and the person who I was with, who had never had a sleep paralysis or anything. I mean, but you know, Alan, perhaps before we leave, you can talk a little bit about your connections that you made between this movie and 237. They seem like they're unrelated, but they're not.
Well, they're definitely not.
Oh, yeah. No, come on. Like, so yeah, he's got the TV station is 42. There's a woman, he's going to be a woman. She goes, oh, that's back when I was living in Torrance. You know,
mm-hmm. Like, I caught that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, there's another guy whose name is Danny. There's a Danny in there, more than once. And then, there's another thing where I think it's the woman who's from Torrance or says she was living in Torrance. He does basically the shot of Dick Halloran in bed, like when he's shining, mm-hmm. when he's in Florida and he's they totally do that. Like, there's this moment where it's she says Torrance, and like in the next, I don't know, 60 seconds or so, it's like coming kind of at that angle. It's not the same color background and everything, but it seemed to me like that was an intentional.
No
70s Afro paintings behind him. No.
Right. But there was definitely a quality to it.
I always think about the woman in 237 is definitely a succubus.
Oh yeah, but well, it's just material. It's like the Gunas themselves are not Purush. Like that's the whole point. It's like you're looking at birth, growth, decay, and death. But if you look at it all at once, you can see what it contains. I mean, it's like I see that scene and I'm like Morrison line of I pressed her thigh and death smiled. It's like that. It's like you see what comes with this. So it's just like if you took the whole of life and you like squeezed it into like one consolidated expression, you know, instead of it's like you don't see the hands of the clock moving, you know, unless you like, you know, condense it. You're like, oh wow, the time has passed. Like it's not always, you see what I'm saying? It's like the duality has such a distance between the sides of the polarity that it's not as apparent what's actually taking place. As if you're looking at the moral of life all at once, you know?
Hey, can you guys just take a peek at this alternate version? Because, David, I know you weren't sure about their faces on the Shadow Men. So can you guys just tell me which of these you like better?
I was about to say one needs a hat, but then I remember it was the Mad Hatter. So,
when you were pissing before, that's what I said. I showed David a version of this. I shared my screen with him, and I said, it's funny because I had already done the Mad Hatter, and then I was like, oh, right, Woody wears a hat too.
I think it's better with the shadow figures because it's communicating the fucking same thing we've been talking about, that the Mothman, Sandman.
Mad Hatter, but them being from the realm of the dead or the land of the dead is fucking peril. Like,
yeah. Yeah, read The Uncanny, and I'll watch that crazy movie Alan recommended.
The first version where their faces are on the shadows.
Yeah, well, no, I like this.
Well,
I like this
Uncanny being
one.
That. To Toy Story, Andy, fuck, man. I mean, that's what it's all about. It's about, like you said, Gollum. And, you know, it's interesting because my mom used to have this book that was, I mean, J.R. Tolkien was a linguist. So he used the word Gollum because it meant to dig under. Do you know what I mean?
No, he used Gollum because you're making a fucking mud man.
It means the same thing. It comes from the root word of
Gollum. Just means mass.
It means mass as fucking as far as clay is concerned. It doesn't mean it means. But he was using it in the way of like digging under the dirt. He wasn't using it in the way of saying that it made something out of nothing. I mean,
no, it's not out of nothing. It's an elemental.
Look, what I'm saying is that it has no relationship to how it was used in Planet of the Apes or in King Kong. Do you know what I'm saying? And by the way, Alan, number two, but.
David, you agree with that?
Well, I'm just trying to follow Planet of the Apes' use of Gollum. I'm trying to assemble
Planet of the Apes. The Gollum is the same character as Julius Caesar. It's like
you're saying that. Okay, yeah. Okay, I'm sorry.
So
Andy Serkis.
Andy Serkis, the connotation does not follow. Like,
he is the Gollum, and he's the Caesar.
Right.
But he's literally the Gollum Caesar because he's a genetically modified, he's the manufactured Caesar. He's Caesar's messiah.
He's Moonchild. I mean, it's fucking weird because in Harry Potter, the character which is expressed in Hero with a Thousand Faces, that the savior child is distinguished by a birthmark, right? So in Planet of the Apes, if you pay attention to the very first one,
which is a lightning flash, and the first magic he encounters is a snake, just speaking to the pathway, but go on.
Right. So in Harry Potter, it's a lightning bolt over the eye, correct?
On his forehead, yeah.
If you pay attention to Planet of the Apes, the first movie with James Franco, who is the Wizard of Oz.
Thank you.
And he's also, Norman Osborn's kid. Harry, what actually is weird because Julius Caesar means Harry. Did you know that?
No. It means.
I feel like.
If you look up Julius Caesar. If you look up, I think it's either Caesar or Julius.
Caesar is the czar. It's the root of czar. So, like, every man and woman is a czar was my joke. It's just and it's also the same letter as Saudi if you were to pronounce it in Hebrew, you know, even though it's Greek. But
I looked it up one time. I can't remember exactly
the czar bomb was the biggest nuclear bomb that we ever used, which is the root of Caesar.
Well, one of the names is...
Which is the whole joke at the end of fucking Planet of the Apes when he sees ISIS, the Statue of Liberty, and he freaks out.
Right.
The fools, they look what they did. And that's all about nuclear holocaust, while you have fucking Caesar literally is the name of the biggest atom bomb that we ever used. It was called Czar.
It's a hairy situation. Look, like, I looked up Julius Caesar. One of the words means hairy. It's Harry Potter. And if you actually look at the first Planet of the Apes, where the main guy is James Franco from Oz, it's Planet of the...
that's weird.
It's Holy Oz. Fuck.
No, hold on. So, yes. And
the main protagonist is Julius. The main antagonist is the same kid who played in Harry Potter as Draco Malfoy, the lizard. Uh-huh. I mean, Draco is dragon, which is reptilian. So Draco has this cattle prod, which basically is the magic wand in Harry Potter. If you follow Harry Potter, Draco takes the wand from Albus Dumbledore. Do you get what I'm saying? And that's what keeps Voldemort, the reptile, from killing Harry at the end. Is he can't use Albus Dumbledore's wand because it belongs to Draco Malfoy. Well, Draco Malfoy, the guy who actually plays in Harry Potter, plays in Planet of the Apes as the one who sticks Julius Caesar, which also means Harry, with the cattle prod, which is the magic wand.
Right.
Also, Caesar, they call him Caesar. They don't call him Julius Caesar, but everybody knows it's JC. It's Julius Caesar. He has a tattoo, he has a birthmark, which represents him as the savior, because he is the one who is born after his mother is injected with the infection that gives him speech. It's weird because it's in some weird way like representing William S. Burroughs' theory that language is a virus. Do you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
The virus.
I forget what the number is, but it's significant too.
Yeah.
But this is huge, and there's a whole thing that Baruch was talking about. I think it's the Gemara. I'd have to look and see where he was talking about it, but he was talking about time travelers. He was like, there's these guys that are referenced in these different places, and it's like in the same line as like the Gollum thing, but like that basically there's these time travelers who are completely covered in hair, like they're like old men, but they're completely like their whole being is covered in hair, and like and you don't know like you know like if it's them, like there's no real indicator that they're like what they really are, you know, and so you don't realize what they really are. It was like they appear one way when they're really doing this whole other thing and they're going between worlds and stuff. But I was tripping out on that because I was like, fucking Marty McFly is the time traveler in Back to the Future, and he's also Teen Wolf with the number 42,
right, with a Harry, which it's weird because because Harry and the Hendersons, his name is Harry, and the John Lithgow connection goes between.
Right.
But it actually, it's weird because in Robert Anton Wilson's Illuminatus trilogy, he says that the good guys are the hairy ones because they are the ones from Earth, and the ones that have less hair are the ones that are the reptilians or whatever. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hear you. I fucking love this, but I gotta take care of myself. It's approaching midnight. So you guys are awesome.
This is episode 137, and we've been chatting for 3 hours and 17 minutes.
So we're done.
137, 317. Goodbye. Good night.
Good night. I'm hanging up. Bye.
Exquisite dead guy, rotating in his display case. Exquisite dead guy, swear I saw his mouth move. Exquisite dead guy, outside my high-rise apartment. Exquisite dead guy, hanging from a sky hook. How am I supposed to let you know the way I feel about you? I feel about you.
Thank you for listening to this broadcast from SyncBook Radio. If you enjoyed this episode, there's so much more content waiting for you at thesyncbook.com. Tune into our other SyncBook Radio programs, including 42 Minutes, Always Record, The Marty Leeds Mathematical Radio Hour, Pentimental, Synchronize, Sync Quick News, as well as our most recent editions, Fine Just Fine and Hypnosis. Our newest episodes are always free, and members get access to our full archive of over 600 hours. You'll find all of this, as well as our books and videos, at thesyncbook.com.